Today on The Grave Talks, the haunted 1904 church. In a small, nearly forgotten town in rural Kansas sits the haunted 1904 church, a relic of a time and a town that's seen better days. Gothic architecture and a storied history of souls passing through its doors and times of celebration and sadness all come with this nearly abandoned structure. In recent years, paranormal investigator Robert Garcia and partners have taken over the haunted 1904 church with the hopes of restoring it, giving it new life as a meeting and investigation space into the world of the paranormal. Many of the souls who once spent their Sundays here seem to continue coming back many years after the services have ended.
Yeah, the haunted 1904 church is a old Methodist church. It's in La Harpe, Kansas, which is this little tiny town south of Kansas City, about an hour and a half away. It's about half an hour from our other location, the 1858 Garner House Hotel. So it's basically what was going on was we have the hotel and we wanted to look around and see if we could find another location that we could have much more room in. The Garner House, we love it, but it's only big enough for maybe 10 people to be inside it at one time. And so this church kind of appeared out of nowhere, and some folks were selling it, and they kind of had a weird story to tell us when we went in to look at it. And they were not from Kansas, and they were only there briefly, maybe 3 months that they owned it. And they kind of had all kinds of weird experiences inside this church while they were living in it. And some of them had to do with shadow people and noises and voices and things like that. And that kind of got our interest. And so we began to explore it more and more. And so it kind of came to pass that we ended up being the ones who purchased it from them when they moved off to another state. And so we've kind of been slowly investigating it in our own time and seeing, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what's the cause of this. And their story was so strange that, you know, they had supposedly some sort of exorcism from a preacher, not a priest, but a Protestant type exorcism done on one of the members of the family. So that's kind of where it started. And that was a little over a year ago.
So these folks that you bought it from, they had converted this church into a home, correct?
Yeah, they were kind of going to do church services and live in it at the same time. So one section of the church was set off as a living space, and then the sanctuary portion of the church was, they were having some sort of lay services in there.
Okay. Now, let's expound upon its history a bit. 1904 church, I'm assuming that is the year it was built, is that correct?
Yes, there's a cornerstone on the church that definitely states that 1904 was the year of the building of this church.
Okay.
So that's where the name comes from.
So then active as a Methodist church from its inception, pretty close to when these folks took it over, or what was its history there?
I think it kind of quit being an actual functioning church in the 1980s, okay, from what I've gathered from the folks around the area. The town of La Harpe is pretty much have shrunk down to almost nothing. I mean, there's, you know, I can't tell you how many residents are there, but it's not a lot, maybe 25 homes at the most.
Sure. So when you have fewer people, you don't necessarily have a congregation anymore to support the church or keep it up and running. What did you find before we get into what you have discovered and what you've experienced when taking possession of this building? What were some of the stories that you had heard from the locals in greater detail, including what you talked about with the owners of having an exorcism of some sort? Let's expound upon that a little bit and its history and what you came to find about the church when it was in its heyday.
So exploring its history, it's been kind of difficult. There's really nothing documented out there about this place being a haunted church or anything of that nature. You know, it basically, you know, we had the locals say, yeah, we went to church there back in the 70s, or my aunt got married there back in the 60s, and things along those lines. So that's where the strangeness of this haunting is, because we can't find any documentation that says this event happened, this is why, you know, we have spirit activity in this church. Now, could it be just that it's, you know, 100 years plus old, that, you know, there's just stuff that exists from that time? We're not sure yet. But as far as documented history, we're still doing our research and still trying to find, like, you know, why do we have a haunting? And as far as the folks that live there, you know, they were living there day and night. So they were living there with their children. And so they were all experiencing different things in different parts of the church. Now, when they had it, the sanctuary was separated by these giant wooden doors. So the sanctuary part and the living part were very separated. So, but one, it seemed like a lot of their activity that they experienced was in the sanctuary portion of the building.
What were some of the things in detail that happened to them while they were living there and experiencing in the sanctuary?
Well, they said that they had been hearing a lot of voices and seeing a lot of shadows and shadow people moving around inside the sanctuary portion of the church. I think that some of that did, you know, come over into the living area as well. And they kind of mentioned they were pretty religious, so that was why they pursued a kind of an exorcism type solution to the issue of the activity they're experiencing. So I know there was laying on of oils of the man. I think the man felt more kind of is not possessed, but oppressed by whatever was going on there. And he was the one who kind of, I felt, was more, I don't like this and I want it to go away, where I felt she was more open to spiritual activity and those sort of things. So I know that a lot of it had to do with that sort of attitude, and they were just really kind of freaked out in a lot of ways by just the activity that was going on around them.
They took the angle, obviously it makes sense, they're very religious. Was the assumption that this was something dark and demonic immediately because of the religious notions that they were holding, or what was their thought process?
I think so. I mean, I think they thought, like, you know, this can't be good, no matter what the activity stems from.
Sure.
So that was why I believe they sought the I don't know if you want to say exorcism or excommunication type angle of whatever was happening in that sanctuary. And then, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on. So it's, you know, I've experienced some things there as well, and things that are different than other places. So
did they find any success with with whatever you want to call it, exorcism, you know, whatever it may be?
I don't think so. Eventually, they ran into some troubles and ended up – that's why they were selling the church and leaving the area. So they kind of left in a hurry.
Okay.
And moved on to another state. And so I don't think – you know, they were there maybe 3 or 4 months. So I think they kind of were abruptly gone.
So it was really a lot of their experiences happening in a very short period of time of them being in possession of this building.
Right, that's correct. Okay. It seemed to like kind of accelerate for them. Now, did that have to do with them personally? You know, was there something about them that brought this out, or was it just kind of lying? You know, the building really wasn't occupied since the 1980s, so except for, you know, some maintenance type people coming and going. Yeah. So, you know, whereas was it just something kind of waiting for human activity again to be there on a full-time basis? You know, I don't know. You know, it's hard to say.
With it not being occupied since the 1980s and them only having roughly 3 to 4 months of inhabiting the property, what kind of state was it in while they were living there? And imagine there'd need to be a lot of renovation work done to make it inhabitable.
Yeah, the building itself, you know, it's in pretty good shape actually for not being really occupied. Now it needs a roof. The roof is even after this winter is worse. But you know, the sanctuary itself is pretty much like a time capsule. They just pretty much shut the doors and left everything standing there. So like, you're standing in the sanctuary, and it's the flag and the podium and the organs, and everything's just sitting there. The hymnals, the they're all still in the back of the pews, and it's kind of got, you know, that kind of feel. Now there's different parts that for them they had to renovate, like that bathroom had to be redone. They had to figure out a heat situation. You know, the kitchen floor is, you know, it's just got some age to it. There's parts that if you really wanted it to be a pristine home, you'd have to come in and totally renovate some of those sections. But as far as, you know, being a building that's just kind of been sitting around for that since the 80s, it's really not too bad a shape.
Sure. I'm looking at pictures of it right now, and it looks like many of the churches, the big brick churches that lined, you know, the streets of every town USA for many years. And, you know, many of them are still standing. Many of them are no longer churches either. You know, but they're still there with the stained glass windows. And the is it a bell tower that is on the cornerstone there?
It does have a bell tower. Now, okay. One time that had a I don't know if the bell is still up there. I know that it used to have kind of a pointed top on top of that bell tower.
Okay.
A roof, and there was a tornado or storm that destroyed that, so that's why now it's just a flat square roof.
So it'd have been like
that bell tower
would have been like the steeple of the building that
exactly
that is no longer there. It's a, you know, it looks like it's a beautiful American type, you know, church that you would have seen everywhere. I can totally picture many in my own hometown in Wisconsin that looked like this, and you know, these are coming few and far between as to where they, how many there used to be around. Many of them torn down, burned down, whatever. But this was church for many people. So I could imagine a lot of emotion in that building, whether it had been for a wedding, whether it had been for a holiday service, whether it had been for a funeral. I imagine the folks, you know, who lived in that town, you know, spent quite a bit of time there while it was an active church and while they were in the town.
Yeah, I mean, the town is kind of close to a much bigger town called Iola. Mm-hmm. So I think probably the congregations drifted over to those areas where, even if you live there, you'd probably go over there to where there's a much bigger congregation and much more active church community than, you know, what would have happened here in this small town that slowly kind of diminished over time.
Sure.
So, you know, it's just kind of, you know, with the lack of people around in the church, you know, what I don't know if it just something was slumbering or just kind of waiting for human activity, but yeah, that those folks seem to have that kind of experience there.
So was this, when you got in contact with them about purchasing the church, how did that go? Was it on the market and then you found it that way, or did you approach them because you had heard through someone that they were wanting to sell? How did that begin?
No, it was on the market. We were kind of looking at some different types of buildings and what we could find that, you know, that kind of to have events at. And my actually co-owner had seen this church before because he's from down around that area, and he was pretty amazed that it was suddenly on the market. And I think that really, you know, piqued his interest in this particular building because he had seen it before, because they, like I said, they had only been there a short time. So I don't think that was the first time that the building had been for sale. So that's kind of how they listed it publicly, and we went to look at it.
Knowing that you're someone who's looking at buying this, you know, as a paranormal investigator, as a group of sorts, what, let me ask you that, and these being fairly religious folks, how did that go? Was there any hesitancy of who they were selling it to, or did they just kind of want it gone?
I don't think so. I mean, we really didn't approach it as, hey, we're paranormal investigators or anything like that. You know, we just kind of went as businessmen that we are, and just said, you know, that, you know, we were interested in as for event space.
Sure.
And, you know, and then I think that kind of slowly kind of, that door kind of slowly creaked open as to, you know, who we are. Mm-hmm. And their experiences kind of slowly leaked out to where finally it was just kind of out in the open over the space of time that we were looking at it and deciding if we wanted to purchase it. So
were you looking at it when you first bought it as something that is likely haunted? Did you know anything about it being haunted? Was it more so, let's start inquiring and see, because the odds are there that this may be, there's something to it? Or was it just for, if it's event space, it's event space?
I think more it was just it was event space to start, and okay. We were looking for a place, you know, we could do some bigger things, and have like conferences and things like that.
Yeah.
And so it kind of, once their story started coming out, you know, we got more and more intrigued, of course, just because of who we are. our careers as paranormal investigators, not just, you know, and for me as a historian and those sort of things always interest me, of course.
Yeah.
Especially out in these little towns where, you know, you don't expect these sort of things. You know they can happen, but mm-hmm. it's not on anyone's radar. Like, oh, here's this place, you know, that everyone's been talking about for the last 60 years. It's just kind of a church in a small town, and some people have a crazy story to tell.
That's the interesting thing about small towns with things like this in them. I almost feel like, and you tell me if you agree, that you get to some of these places and it is very hush-hush if there is something that has gone on or there's paranormal activity or something unexplained. While everyone may know it or have had an experience, it's not like whether everyone's going to share it together. It's almost like a family that doesn't want to talk about the haunted house that they live in, and it takes, you know, the children to be 70 years old to talk with their brothers and sisters, and they all have the same story, and everyone's like, why didn't we talk about this with mom and dad when they were around? Because they probably had something. Small towns seem to almost have that that family-like dynamic of, well, we don't want to talk about that, or, you know, because of the time and place of when a lot of this would have occurred.
Yeah, I mean, that's always, when you're especially out here in the Midwest, you know, you're mm-hmm. always kind of, you know, I've done, you know, as with my group Elite Paranormal of Kansas City that I ran for, you know, about, 12, 13 years, I've done a lot of home cases, and a lot of them are always kind of on the down low and on the hush hush, and I don't publish them
sure.
or tell people about them. So, because you never know how that's going to affect the families, and not just the families that live there, but the extended families. And I always leave that up to the families, like how they want to approach this sort of thing. And so I think when you get out and you own historic landmarks, because, you know, the other location we own is an Old West hotel that has a long famous guest list that you did a show about it.
Yep.
And so that, even that location, though, being a historic landmark in a small town that used to be an old West kind of tombstone town, cow town, it, you know, you still kind of have to approach things with the sensitivities of all the people that live there still.
Sure.
You know, you don't want to get people upset. But, you know, the paranormal, in my view, is part of, you know, the culture now, and it's kind of been more and more opened up. And I guess living in Kansas City, I've done so many events for a lot of historic landmarks here in the city and over the years that, you know, a lot of them kind of embrace that and make that a part of not only just, you know, the historic value of their location, but, you know, their overall value and what the locations bring to the table for the public.
Sure. No, I completely agree. So when you got in there, and what was your first impression of when you're exploring the building as a possible place to purchase? Anything comes to mind that did you feel anything in there? Did you sense anything other than, you know, churches have a certain aura about them? What was going through your mind as you began to explore the possibility of taking on this building?
I was amazed by the architecture at first, because you go inside and, you know, you're thinking, okay, it's just a church. And then it had these amazing doors that covered, there's like a choir type room, and then there's these sanctuary doors that were, probably 12 foot tall. And then you walk into the sanctuary and like everything's a time capsule. And it's just sitting there. Chalkboard, the kids did church services on from the Sunday school. The organs still work. The piano still works. The pews were all still sitting there. You know, it has this kind of wavy banister or balcony. And it's just kind of amazing to me, like, wow, you know, like they really did just shut the door here. And, you know, and I saw that some of the, you know, just the things that needed to be done to kind of, you know, you always kind of hesitate when you see the things that the brick and mortar things that have to be fixed. But, and I just kind of, I was kind of taken aback by that. And then there's all these stained glass windows, you know, and a lot of them have references to historic figures in, you know, in the stained glass where they're talking about people, you know, this stained glass window is dedicated to this teacher or, you know, or this pastor or this family. So you have all those sort of things in there too. And so it's, you know, it's really like, you know, it's not a normal like time capsule, like, you know, it's not a Civil War site or something like that, but it's still got a lot of historic value that, you know, you like, wow, you know, this is amazing that, you know, this is just kind of time stood still here. So for me, that was my, and I'm always that way. I'm much, very much a history type guy. So I was really amazed with that sort of feel to the place.
Mm-hmm. When you got in there, another town not very big anymore, was there any objection to who was going to be taking over the property or what was the opinion of the town?
No, they didn't really seem to mind one way or another. Sure. From what we took from the city hall, you know, just as long as, you know, we make sure we do the upkeep of the place, and, you know, so they seem to be kind of neutral. Sure, okay. Quite honestly,
that's good. That's good that, you know, someone's there to take care of the building and not just let it, you know, sit and decay, you know, into a further state. So tell me about it. You got into the building. This is yours now. How did it all begin as far as finding that you weren't necessarily alone at the haunted 1904 church?
Well, we would go in there is what would happen is we would start to kind of just, now you're talking about people who have been in a lot of haunted places around the country. So, you know, we began to notice immediately, like, hey, there's a shadow just went from left to right back there in the sanctuary, or we'd hear the noises and hear voices and things like that. Now, a lot of it for me is around the bell tower area. And I began to notice, you know, a lot of movement seemed to come and go from that bell tower and the balcony. And you would just begin to get the sense like, hey, someone's in here, someone's talking, but nobody else has access to this building. You know, am I hearing it from outside? And you look outside and it's almost a ghost town around there. So mm-hmm. Like, you know, who can this be? What can it be? And that was kind of the initial kickoff, like, you know, maybe there is something to these folks' story that we're living here, that there's stuff that goes on in here, you know, a lot.
When you started to have some of those moments of realizing, okay, there is stuff that's going on here, what was your approach as far as trying to document or capture it? Other than, you know, just kind of, you know, sensing it, you know, off in the corner of your eye and things of that nature.
Well, you know, we have arrays of cameras and audio equipment and all kinds of, you know, 15 years of paranormal equipment. And then my co-owner, Justin Spurrier, has probably more paranormal equipment than anyone I've ever known. So we began to just kind of set up stuff and leave it, see what we could capture, that sort of thing, capture voices. Kind of the approach we did at the Garnet House when we first took ownership of it. We'd put the voice-activated audio and see what we could capture. Now, this location we took over right before the summer, so we did have some initial paranormal investigators that came there, and I kind of let those folks, from my perspective, more see what they felt mm-hmm. versus what I felt, and those kind of events were pretty interesting.
Tell me about that. Tell me about the first investigations that they did in the building and how that went.
We did have one group that they came through town, or they came through the area, and they were kind of on a cross-country jaunt doing different places. And they investigated Garnet House, and then they came down to the church another night. And he immediately began to sense that, you know, there's something going on. She, for whatever reason, did not like the church. And so she would not come inside. She would only stay outside. And these people were paranormal investigators. And she said, "It just, this place just freaks me out." And now my co-owner did investigate with him because that he was, she was staying outside and he would only, he was in there alone. So my co-owner Justin was like, "Well, I'll stay and I'll investigate with you. And, you know, we'll see what we capture." Now, what they captured was the sound of like someone choking, like they're hanging. Mm-hmm. And you heard it audibly, though. It's not an EVP. They're like, you know, on the audio clip, they're like, you hear someone going, you know, like that. And they're like, "What is that? Who is that?" And they're hearing it inside the building. Mm-hmm. Now, the wife is outside and she's not hearing this at all, but she doesn't want to come inside. But they capture the sounds of this person choking. And they had audio, the EVPs and disembodied voices as well. But that was the major thing they captured while they were there, was this choking sound. And that wasn't really published out there to people. You know, we didn't go out and start throwing that around on the internet or anything, this event. And so some things happen later that kind of fall in with that. And I'll stay with this couple here right now. But I guess Justin and this other gentleman went down into the basement and were investigating down there. And the basement's kind of, at one time, was probably a brick floored basement, but it's deteriorated over the years. It's had water and it's had issues. So they were down there investigating, and it's very creepy down there. It's kind of a weird space. And while they were down there, the wife who's outside, and across the street from the church is the city hall building, and she's standing over there. And these folks are just out wandering the street at night, as you do in small towns. You don't have to worry about it. People go out at night and walk. Mm-hmm. So I guess they walk up and they're talking to her about the church. And I guess while Justin and this other gentleman were downstairs in the basement, they hear this loud growl outside, like this like a very loud growl. Now I'm like immediately go, okay, it's a small town. It's semi-rural. Could be an animal of some sort. But the way they described it was, this was no sort of animal. And they, I guess she was yelling for Justin and her husband, but they couldn't hear her because they were in the basement. And they were like, and I guess they never heard this growl down there, but she heard it outside. And so did these passerbys, because they were kind of taken aback. They're like, "What was that?" Because they, and there was no knowledge of them about any kind of why they're there or mm-hmm. paranormal or anything. You know, it's not even the realm of their thought. So they're just like, "What was that?" And I guess they're looking around for what it could be. And, you know, there's no dog. There's definitely no wolves in Kansas. So, I mean, you know, I don't know what it was, but it definitely freaked the wife out. And this was on that same night that they had captured those choking sounds and the people talking and stuff in there. So, you know, pretty interesting night for just one little investigation.
Did she ever go into the building?
I don't think so. No, they're supposed to come back and we'll see if round two, mm-hmm. but I don't think she ever did. So
to begin with, the first investigation here, I mean, it almost sounds kind of ominous. It doesn't sound like this is just the old church organ lady that's hanging around that wants to play a tune. It sounds like there might be something, you know, not so welcoming about whatever is there with the property.
Yeah, and you know, and then you get into the realm of psychic mediums and remote viewers. And I know I've worked with one in Elite Paranormal that I trust for a lot of years. He lives out in California, and we do a kind of a methodology where we set up a speakerphone setup, kind of like a conference call for business. Mm-hmm. And then we do our readings that way, and we record the sessions. And we get a lot of voices through cell phones. And, you know, we have a phenomena that we have coined a term for. And But I trust him, so I know him. I've done, you know, 50 plus investigations with him, mm-hmm. you know, and he can come up, he can say, you know, tell you amazing things that end up being true. That not are, sometimes they're not always about ghosts. Sometimes they're about your car or your house, or you just never know what direction he's going to go. It's whatever comes to him. But in this instance, we knew some other folks, and in this field, you know, a lot of people that are psychic mediums, and you know, and you run into them. But we had one. We had a couple of them described to us in there that, and these people didn't know each other. These were total separate reach outs from these folks that they picked up on someone had hung themselves there. Now, I don't have any documented proof of this, that someone was hung there or they hung themselves or there was a suicide. Mm-hmm. But they did capture the sounds of someone choking to death or choking in there. So, is that related? I don't know. That's a mystery that has to be unraveled. And, you know, I don't know if we can find the answer to that, but that's definitely one avenue that I want to chase in the future. But, you know, I don't know if I'll ever find the answer, because sometimes these things just don't exist in a written form.
Yeah. The records may not be there to, and if you do find anything, it may be word of mouth, and the folks that may know factually may not even be around anymore.
Yeah, correct. And so, you know, and as far as ominous goes, you know, I every time I see a lot of shadow and shadow figures and that sort of thing out of the corner of your eye moving, mm-hmm. to me, that's ominous. Not saying it's demonic. I never go there. That's not what I'm talking about. But, you know, there can be sometimes a dark type haunting without there being that sort of thing, and you just don't know why. Mm-hmm. You know, what is it about it? What's gone on there that would cause, you know, such a thing to go on from a paranormal perspective?
That wraps up part one of our interview with Robert Garcia. In part two of our interview for Gravekeepers Only, we'll discuss what kind of disturbing evidence has been found by paranormal investigators at the haunted 1904 church in recent months. What happened when a door flung open in the face of an investigator? Has anyone captured compelling EVPs that may reveal the identity of who may be haunting the church? What has Robert personally discovered at the haunted 1904 church, and what's been caught on camera? And does a certain trigger object need to be there, need to be present for a spirit to come out in a specific location? And who does Robert believe is haunting this church? To hear part two of the interview, become a Gravekeeper at patreon.com/thegravetalks. You'll have access to part two of this interview and all of our interviews from every single episode, from the past, present, and into the future. It's only $5 a month to become a Gravekeeper. patreon.com/thegravetalks. Support our show and keep it on the air. If you'd like to support the haunted 1904 church and help with the restoration efforts, especially with the roof, you can visit Robert's website at 1858hotel.com. That's 1858hotel.com to find out more about the church and its restoration efforts. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.